Beacon Group's news meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Kirk, and I'm an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. A preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for a membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. But we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience and are willing to sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the steps of the day, and then we split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide and conquer. No, divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. I have asked Marilyn to graciously read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Gotta unmute.
Unmute.
There you go.
Okay, I am muted. Okay. We now step one. I'm Marilyn, alcoholic. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Marilyn. Today, we will hear a talk on steps 4 and 5. Please give a warm welcome to Nancy from Burkhalter, Texas.
Hi there. My name is Nancy, and Nancy B, and I am an alcoholic. Because of a loving God and the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, people just like you, I've been sober since November the 7th, 1981, and it's a great day sober. I want to thank John F. for the invitation. It is such a privilege to be with you this morning. It's a privilege to be in any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. But thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to participate in my own recovery. And so I want to qualify just for briefly. I grew up in alcoholism, and what I learned from that, my dad was an alcoholic. He claimed to be alcoholic. He just didn't seek recovery. And he believed that he could, if he went to work, worked hard and provided for us, he could stop by the local beer joint on the way home and have a few drinks with his friends. See, what he didn't know is the phenomenon of craving was going to happen. Not sometimes or not maybe. So we didn't know when he was going to be home. And because once he took that first drink, it was an unpredictable situation at best. And my mother wasn't an untreated alcoholic. My mother was an alligator. Now, alligators have these really big eyes and they're snappy and they can track you down, right? Well, that was my mom, because when my daddy didn't come home right when he was supposed to, she'd put the kids in the car and we're going to track that boy down. And we did. We'd find him and bring him home. And I would be the one that would make the mistake of speaking to my dad. I'd say, "Dad, whatever." And boy, those alligator eyes would cut around and she'd say, "Oh, don't you speak to him." And I thought, wow, I can't wait to get married. But anyway, I was like, what's happening? It seemed like it happened every day. Of course it didn't. And I asked my mother one time, I said, why is it that we do this time and time again? We have to go find him. We have to beg him to come home. And then we don't talk to him. And my mother looked at me with the seriousness of teaching me that honesty is the best policy, and said, drinking is bad. People who drink are very bad and they must be punished. And see, my mother didn't know that wasn't the solution to alcoholism. She had no idea. She really did believe if we let him know that we were angry, if we showed him that we were angry, if we punished him, that some morning, I guess, he would wake up and realize that he needed to go to work and come home and participate in the family. But as you know, neither of those things changed, because we lived in the family disease of alcoholism. And so that's what I learned, and that's what I took with me. So, of course, I'm not going to drink. I discovered when I was about 11, I was brilliant. Well, that was kind of between these two ears that I was, I was a legend in my own time. And I needed to believe that, because you know what I just said, I'm not enough. I'll never be enough. But I developed that arrogance. And so I wasn't going to drink. That would be stupid. And my dad was pathetic. He was a loser. I said much worse, that I wouldn't dishonor this meeting. And so I went to college, graduated. I go to college. Of course I did. I'm brilliant. I'm going to be rich and famous someday. Well, if you're new and you want to be rich and famous, don't major in education, because there's a big glitch there. I've been an educator my whole life, and I'm certainly not rich nor famous. So, but I did that. I got out of town. And I want you to know that for 4 years in college, I punished people who drank. I didn't drink. That'd be stupid. And I'm not stupid, because I believed that I could have that kind of control. But then when I got out of college and I'm living in these singles apartment and I'm having a good time, I'm not having a good time. I am isolated. I don't know how to be a friend among friends. So some of those friends from college came to see me, because there were parties going on at my apartments and they wanted to party. In 1 second's time, I said, "Let's party." 1 second's time. And I tell that every time, because today, if I'm one of those who aren't doing all the things, working and studying these steps, going to meetings, having a sponsor, working with others, prayer and meditation, being of service, I don't know which one is keeping me sober today. Or I might say let's party, because I know people with longer sobriety than me that had to go back out. So that was my story. And I'm going to just tell you about, because then I did drink. I didn't intend to. I didn't mean to. I have values. And I want you to know that I didn't break those values right up until I did. I'm going to tell you about my last, because I need to hurry. I'm going to tell you about my last drunk really quickly. You always enjoy it more than me. I was having a dinner party. I was nervous about the dinner party. So I started drinking about 10 a.m. Okay. By 2:30, I didn't care who came to the stupid party. Right. We had a lot of booze. We had a lot of food, but apparently people came. And during that party, a dinner party, after eating, we went out on the patio. It was beautiful music. And I decided to get in the hot tub. Well, unfortunately, a song came on that I'd heard when I was in San Antonio, Texas, at a bar where some bodybuilders did this routine that they'd won this big competition. Well, I became a bodybuilder. Not in the hot tub. I jumped out on the deck, naked, as we say in Texas, and I became a bodybuilder. I had to be told that the next day. And it's funny, I recovered from that that situation. I hadn't been a bodybuilder since 1981, and I've recovered from that because I've worked these steps. And certainly the fourth and fifth step had huge, huge impact on that. And because let me tell you, it was funny right until it wasn't. I found out the next day what I had done. And people were humiliated. I had humiliated myself. And this sums up basically my alcoholism. And that's it. If you don't like it, don't come to my house. Don't come to my house. I'd become somebody that I didn't recognize. I became somebody that I didn't like, but I did a really good job of acting like I did. And again, that I thought I was smarter than I was, and I had more money than I had. So I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the good news is, because there's always good news, the good news is I stayed long enough that today I'll do anything you ask me to do. I'll do anything you ask me to do. I don't have time enough on this earth to pay back Alcoholics Anonymous what I've been given. So when I say it's a privilege to be in this meeting and to be able to share with you, really, there are not adequate words to express that gratitude. So I've been asked to do steps 4 and 5, but to concentrate on the fear and sex. So I don't know about you, but the first question I had, and I told Sharon, I've got notes, because we'd be here until tomorrow if I didn't have notes. She heard me at a convention, and we could be here until breakfast tomorrow. So I've got notes. The first question I had was, why on earth would you ask me to go back into the past? That was so painful. It truly could have never dawned on me that taking a thorough and fearless inventory of all that contributed to that pain caused by me and other people, places, and things like principles, situations, would be of any value. Could have never convinced me. Because before getting here, I had worked vigorously to hide, to discount, ignore, pretend it didn't happen, deny my past. My goal was to look good and be untouchable. So it wasn't until I got sober and in recovery, not just without alcohol, that I was able to realize that the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous would make it possible for me to be the person I had always wanted to be, with integrity and perseverance and the other principles, regardless of my past. Oh, sorry. So sorry about that. I turned that off. I'm going to make sure. Okay, I think so.
Siri here. Let me know if I can help.
Okay, that wasn't even embarrassing. Okay. Anyway, it was regardless of my path, that if I followed directions, my life could change if I followed the directions, like with the sponsor directions, like in the steps 4 and 5. I was going to be amazed that how that information in my inventory used in the rest of the steps would change me forever. Now, that's if I didn't attempt to graduate and take back what I thought was my power. So in the 12 and 12, it tells us that without the suggested inventory process, most of us found that the faith that is needed and really works in our everyday lives stays out of reach. Also, that those of us that came in with self-righteousness, grandiosity, my hand is up, may be insulted at AA's suggested inventory. And I think in many ways I was. Like, you know, I picked out the steps right away. I picked out the steps that I thought applied to me. That gives you a little bit of a hint. So I was one who almost let their false sense of self-worth. Now, sometimes it was arrogance. Sometimes it was self-defeating. But I almost let that false sense of self-worth cause me to miss it all. All of a program that is offered for fun and for free, no dues or fees, and had the potential to free me from my past. So basically, the 4-step made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves is asking me to find a private place and tell the truth in the areas of my life that held resentment, fear, and sexual irresponsibility. So today, as I've said, I've been asked to share on fear and sex. Now, because I used to lie in my own diary, even when nobody was going to read it. Yeah, I was that kid that lived in chaos. And so if it was a bad day, I made it a good day. You get the picture. My sponsor and I talked at length about believing, trusting that there would be no value in not telling the truth. Having lied basically all of my life, he was helpful in letting me see that that had availed me nothing. I wasn't happy. I wasn't the person that I wanted to be. In fact, acceptance is not needing your past to have been different. So the Big Book makes it very clear that although the 3rd step is a crucial and vital step, quote, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Liquor was but a symptom, end quote. And the 12 and 12 points out that we thought it was conditions that caused us to drink, that if we could change those conditions, we could drink successfully. It never occurred to us that we would have to change ourselves to meet the conditions, whatever they were, end quote. See, I thought I was doing that. I thought I had the power to do that. It did not take me too very long to realize that not only could I not, but that I would be glad to find that God could and would if I would just stay out of the way. So first, we're going to talk about fear. The Big Book points out that fear touches pretty much every aspect of our lives. And experience shows that self-reliance is usually the culprit. I don't know about you, but I grew up believing that I had to be the one in charge, look good at all costs, have all the right answers, act like I knew more than I knew. Even though alcoholism tears us down early on, growing up in an alcoholic home, I began to develop an arrogance that was bigger than life. It was based on absolute terror that you were going to find out something I didn't know, that I couldn't do, that I couldn't fix. The 12 and 12 implies that pride, which is listed, by the way, as the first of the seven deadly sins, probably for most of us plays a huge part in our fear. Pride has me put in places where I should never have been, that I was afraid and created fear for me. Nobody's going to tell me that I can't fill in the blank. Nobody's going to tell me. Nobody's the boss of me. But from the big book, quote, that pride and fear beat us down when we try to look within. Pride says, you need not pass this way. And fear says, you dare not look. And the big book says, although we may have self-confidence in some areas of our lives, which isn't necessarily bad, but self-confidence as well as self-reliance failed us. But there's good news. I say that a lot. There's good news. There's always good news when we're talking about recovery. In the chapter, How It Works, the words, perhaps there's a better way, quote, we think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. It goes on to say, and in my opinion, promise, that we can now begin to have God as the director, and we can play the role he has given us. And to the extent we are, fully surrendered to humbly rely on him, he will enable us to match calamity with serenity. I know that to be true. I have evidence in my life that is true. And there are many times when I've been embarrassed to let others know about my position on God. When I was in church, I learned things that were helpful to me. I don't regret that past, but I left the church. So I had a lot of fear that maybe God wasn't going to be real happy with me. And so when I came into recovery, I was terrified and embarrassed to let anyone see me pray. Remember, I was not too embarrassed to be naked on a hot tub deck doing a bodybuilding routine, but embarrassed to acknowledge a relationship with the God of my understanding. In the big book, page 68, we never apologize for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he would have us be. I used to read it, do, and remove our fear. At once, we commenced to outgrow fear. It doesn't say immediately. It doesn't say it'll never come back. And then it says, now about sex. The next part goes to sex. I always laugh when I read that next sentence. It says, many of us needed an overhauling there. Doesn't say change, not a new attitude, not perhaps a new perspective, but an overhauling. The first two sentences in the 12 and 12 say creation gave us, quote, creation gave us instincts for a purpose. Without them, we wouldn't be complete human beings. This implies that our instincts are God-given, therefore good. However, if we do not find a way of discovering where our instincts have been warped, there can be no change in behavior that doesn't work and cause emotional, physical, and spiritual pain. So if you do the same, you get the same. That's my words. So we're asked, what are the underlying causes? Again, some more good news. AA gives us a perfect way to do a self-appraisal. So the overhaul is effective in making the needed changes in our sexual behavior. The big books ask these questions. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or considered? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should I have done instead? And by writing the answers to these down on paper, we have a chance with God's help to be given the opportunity to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. I could not imagine having a sexual relationship with no guilt or remorse, to know I was being honest even when it felt impossible. We are assured that sex is God-given and therefore good. As you can see, the literature always gives us a solution and guidance and directions on how to find and use those solutions. It certainly points out and discusses a lot of our problems. But again, the solutions are always there for the taking. At the end of the chapter on how it works, page 71, it says, in this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you're convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. So that takes us to step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. I was one of the people that the big book describes in the chapter into action. Well, haven't I done enough by looking and telling the truth about my fears and sexual defects? Well, apparently not. I did that, apparently not, based on the evidence of those who have gone before us, because they were willing to do the fifth step. Number one, only self-appraisal was not ever going to be enough. Two, we had to go farther. We had to go further. Best reason not to do so may actually prevent us from achieving and maintaining sobriety. That got my attention. I used to think that statements like that were gross exaggerations. But having met people who stopped at the third or fourth step, who went back out, I've met people. I came to believe and experience the benefits of this step. Like many things in the program, simple directions. Book has simple directions. They're just not always easy to do. Sometimes while doing the step five, more is revealed that didn't make the fourth step. It's very important to find the right person to do that fourth step with. I've always done it with my sponsor. The big book gives you several suggestions on scenarios that have been effective. So for as long as I can remember, I've wanted somebody to listen to me without judgment. I've done fifth steps with my sponsor, and I've heard fifth steps from those I sponsor. And I've been able to do it on both sides. It's true, I've been able to feel like I was not judged, and I've been able to give people a safe place. And it says in the book that most people, when you're asked to do a fifth step, you're honored. You're glad to do it. You're honored that somebody has that confidence in you. Times when that old defect of pride rears its ugly head. And it says on page 75 in the big book, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared. We will often come strongly. We feel that we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Wow. Some of my experience in doing the fourth step. My first fourth step was, I'm going to use the word lame. I didn't know how to be honest. I was afraid. I couldn't imagine writing down things. If you were a person like me, and if you'd known what they did to me, all of those excuses, it was pretty lame. And my sponsor came to my house to hear my fifth step, and I had it typed out and thought she should just read it. I was missing the whole point, but I want you to know my experiences with the fifth step when I'd got all the way in and sat all the way down in the program have been that I know and see I'd worked in others that value of telling it all and telling the truth. And then sitting down with God and another person. I pull up a chair. That's God's chair. And I look my sponsor in the eye. I've only done it with a sponsor. And so I've had experiences where I know without question, I have been in a safe place, that somebody will listen and help me see things that I'm not able to see. Listen with those ears that can hear and help me see those things. If I don't get all the dust out of the corners, I don't know about you, sometimes when I'm sweeping the den, I want to go around the furniture. But the truth is that I want to know, I want to sweep out all that dust that's in the corner. Because what if that's the thing that's holding me back from the sunlight of the Spirit? So I've had many experiences with the fourth and fifth step. And I got to tell you, if my sponsor told me today I needed to do those steps, I'm in. I'm all in. And then I took a page out of the daily reflections for each step. And then I'm going to finish up. I think that I'm getting close. Okay. Looking within, make a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. From the 12 and 12, page 42. Step four is the vigorous and painstaking effort to discover what the liabilities each of us have been and are. I want to find exactly when and where my natural desires have warped me. I wish to look squarely at the unhappiness this has caused others and myself by discovering what my emotional deformities are. I can move toward their correction. Without a willing and persistent effort to do this, there can be little sobriety or contentment for me. To resolve ambivalent feelings, I need to feel a strong and helpful sense of myself. Such an awareness doesn't happen overnight, and no one's self-awareness is permanent. Everyone has the capacity for growth and for self-awareness through an honest encounter with reality. When I don't avoid issues, but meet them directly, always trying to resolve them, they become fewer and fewer. And for the fifth step, cleaning house. Somehow being alone with God doesn't seem as embarrassing as facing up to another person until we actually sit down and talk aloud about what we have so long hidden. Our willingness to clean house is still largely theoretical. It's also in the 12 and 12, page 60. It was unusual for me to talk to God and myself about my character defects, but to sit down face to face and openly discuss these intimacies with another person was much more difficult. I recognize in the experience, however, a similar relief to the one I had experienced when I first admitted I was alcoholic. I began to appreciate the spiritual significance of the program and that this step was just an introduction to what's yet to come in the remaining seven steps. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Texans never talk that fast. But I
Thank you, Nancy. Hey, there's no dues or fees for it.